Welcome to the 272nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Okay, plant-based riders, I thought I'd do a podcast just for you. Short and sweet. Running in Port Charlotte, Florida at 5:30 in the morning. If you ever wanted to run with a blanket on, this is the time to do it. Feels like I'm running with a blanket on today. Wearing my Ultra Torrens. No, I'm not sponsored by anybody, don't worry. Got a Pezzle headlamp on. It's dark. Gonna go meet the other crew. Have Scott down here, and Tammy, and Elaine. I'm missing Donna, because she's got a little bit of a timeout. Great morning otherwise. The stars are out. You can hear my foot cadence. Trying a little bit of the Tony Riddle drills. He does 1, 2, 3, 4. And you bring your leg up. Pull your leg up behind you. Use your hamstring. Get your foot in the air. Set it down flat. One thing he talked about was if you land on a flat foot, then you don't have to waste the energy of going all the way down and then back up to push off. So you want to land and off. Land and push off. I thought I'd add a little bit of my morning training runs. We've been meeting the plant-based striders at 6 o'clock Wednesday and Friday and Saturday. So if you live in the Port Charlotte area and like to join us down at Edgewater Boat Ramp, Spring Lake, if you're in town, that would be great. Otherwise, you can join us virtually on the Facebook group, Plant-Based Striders. Swimming and running right now. So this week I've done a 6 mile run and then jump in my endless pool to do some strokes, get ready for my swim run in Texas. So that should be fun. Again, we're starting to up the mileage for the marathon and hoping that the California International Marathon is still on. Who knows? But training's going good so far. Done a lot of mobility. Talked a little bit about some of the drills with Tony Riddle to help do some speed work. I've been trying to do easy speed work, light pole to light pole, little striders, a little bit of tempo work, but not prolonged sessions. But I got to tell you that Tony Riddle, some of the drills with the fast leg and the butt kick ups and the hops give you pretty good workout. We have a wellness challenge. It's lunging into fall. So that's going well. So I'm doing my lunges and some other mobility work, trying to keep everything moving. So it's going good. Today, I just kind of wanted to start a little bit. I was running and saw a family getting ready for school because school's finally back in session. And I noticed that they were all shaped alike and they were all overweight. And I wondered, it's kind of sad as far as when did it all start to fall apart. And I know some people, the middle age spread started in middle age and diseases started at that point, maybe 40s, 50s, if that's, what we would call middle age. But sometimes people, have trouble their whole life being overweight. And sometimes it's one person in family and sometimes it's everybody in a family. And a lot of times it has to do with what everybody ate. Sometimes there's some other circumstances around individuals having weight difficulty. There's a microbe issue. Can be infections that lead to, changes in the microbiome that change calorie extraction. There'd be all kinds of things that, maybe an individual, but more often than not, it's entire families that it's kind of the way that they eat. And I've had people in the practice early on that have been sick at a very young age because they've never eaten anything but fast food. And, you know, then I've had people that, you know, ate pretty healthy, lived on a farm, and then when they got older, that's when things, you know, started eating out more, and things got out of control, and their health started to deteriorate. And I've correlated that a little bit with, you know, how long it takes to kind of right the ship to get people back healthy. Because I think that if you're a lifelong junk food eater, perhaps there's more toxins and you've suffered more intracellularly than you even appreciate. And it takes longer to get people back into their optimal health and wellness. Still doable. The body can heal itself if you take the junk food out and you take the bad things out. But those cravings can run really deep for sugar, salt, and oil. And those processed chemicals, you know, they have entire chemistry departments in some of the big food industries is set just how to get people hooked on these, you know, particular tastes. You know, when you say Dorito, when I say Dorito, you know what it tastes like. When I say Pringles, you know what it tastes like. People, you know, those tastes stay in your head for a reason. Sometimes we blame things that happened early in our life for what's going on now. You hear often people say they can't run because they injured their knees playing high school sports or ran too much in college, maybe an old football injury. But the question is, when did that pain start from those injuries? Certainly if people had a traumatic event, they may have been in chronic pain since the injury started. But more often than not, I think that the old football injuries or the old track injuries didn't hurt till people got older. And it's more of a combination of metabolic waste and what they're eating now and what they're doing now and perhaps some of those old injuries and imbalances that were back in the day. For instance, you know, if someone had a lot of trauma to their legs from playing football, and maybe they had a little bit of discomfort once in a while, but then they put 50 pounds on, obviously that's going to make that much worse. If they put 50 pounds on associated with a lot of inflammation and a lot of inflammatory compounds in their diet, then that might even make that aggravation worse. We look back to what we want to attribute most of the discomfort to being an injury that we can't really change, but how much did time compound that injury? And some of that stuff can actually be erased. If we quit running after high school track and then go to run again and our knees hurt, is it that our knees hurt because we had injuries from high school track, or was it that we haven't done anything for such a long time and we've had a job that's either sitting or movements that have made the running motion no longer a mobility that is easy for us? We talk a lot in the office about, you know, doing squats, and squat you must, because having good hips and glutes and lower back musculature, especially glutes and we'll say hamstrings and quadriceps, not only helps with mobility, but it also, there's a lot of muscle fibers and mitochondria that helps with metabolism, that helps with the sheer blood flow to your head. There is associated studies where people that start a weight training program, even in nursing homes, and get some strength in their lower legs have better improved memories, better scores on mentation. And I've noticed in my practice, you know, as people deteriorate in their ability to move, one of the first things that goes is their ability to get out of a chair. And people just kind of sit and flop back into a chair. And that just didn't happen overnight. It could be exacerbated by an illness or that required hospitalization, but it's a slow and gradual deterioration that people didn't notice. So if you have trouble getting off the floor or trouble going down and doing a squat and, you know, with your heels on the ground, when did it happen? You know, when did you notice it? Was it just today when you tried it? When was the last time you got off the floor? When was the last time You know, you tried to step up on something high. You know, when was the last time reaching up became difficult? Because sometimes we just don't do those activities, and then before you know it, we can't do those activities and we've lost range of motion. And the, you know, the two big movers and shakers on our bodies are the hinge joints and our shoulders and our hips. And when your hips lose their mobility, you know, you lose a lot of your ability to walk and to step up and to step down and balance. Same thing with your shoulders, upper back starts to hurt, neck starts to hurt. Rotator cuff tears start to happen because we've lost this mobility because we haven't really been doing it, and things get tight and out of whack. You know, the old saying goes, my mother used to say, you know, don't let your weight get out of control, because it's a lot easier to take weight off when you're young than when you get older. And I think that adage also goes for mobility. It's a lot easier if you keep moving than if you are all of a sudden unable to move and you've lost range of motion to get it back. But in our practice, we, you know, we do wellness challenges, and we're starting to incorporate a lot of movement with foam rolling and trigger release, and to get people moving. So I think that's real important. If you haven't looked into some of the things, if you have a job that you sit down all the time, is to get up and to actually move, to do some squats at your desk several times a day, you know, maybe set your watch to every hour, do a couple quick squats and some mobility with your hamstrings, do a little bit of work at night, make sure your shoulders range of motion, and things around the house, you know, when you go to reach for something, make sure that, you know, you pay good attention that you're reaching for things appropriately, you're getting a good, take the time to get a good stretch out of it, go through a doorway, you know, get a good stretch out of your shoulders. Practice a good squat. If you can't get all the way down, you know, work a little bit every day to get that squat down. Make sure your hips are mobile by doing some, you know, release. There's a lot of good YouTube videos on. Again, you know, we work with people in the practice to try to get that hip mobility better. And I think that, you know, again, the fix it, keep it moving if it's not broke. But if it is broken or decreased, it's really important to get things moving and not just accept that you have to sit in a chair, or that you can't get off the ground, or you can't ride a bike, or that you can't run, because most of that is fixable once you get the hinges loosened up a little bit. We have people that lose weight and they come in and they say, you know, this diet is not very good because now I'm just a bag of bones. I don't have any muscle mass at all, and I've lost protein. Maybe I do need more protein. You know, everybody's worried about the macronutrient protein. Don't you need more protein when you get older? And the reality is, you need more muscle mass when you get older. And so what's happened after age 30, muscle mass starts to decline and fat mass starts to increase. So then when you take that fat mass off, all of a sudden you see the blaring results of all those years of losing muscle mass if you haven't done anything, or you have not done, you know, you've done the same repetitive motions, you know, over the last 30 years. So, you know, it's a big reminder of what's going on. And of course, when we see people walk, you know, all you do is go to the grocery store and see people walk and see the decreased range of motion of their hips or their knees. But you need to look up a little bit higher, because what we all end up losing is that gluteus mass, which is, you know, again, the biggest driver of a lot of things. And people go to the gyms and they go through all the machine. And, you know, I know people that spend an hour and a half at the gym every day, but they're on the machine sitting. So they're on the machines and they do their arms, they do the press ups, they do the legs, but they're sitting. So they're never activating the glute muscles. And, you know, it's a big source of their balance, but it's a big source of energy production and stability. Even the tailor noticed it many, many years ago when my father went to buy a suit, and the tailor was doing some measurements to adjust his suit. And he said, you know, Jim, he said, you suffer from the disease that a lot of people suffer from. And he's like, what's that? And he said, no acetol. So maybe you can figure out what that is. But a lot of people suffer from that disease, and it's basically because of how we move. My dad was a very physical guy, but he used his back and his arms. He had decreased range of motion in his hips. He was very tight. So if you're someone that sits all day for their job or avoids getting on the ground because it's too difficult to get up, this is the time to start to change the practice. And you start gradually. You know, you don't want to start with, okay, let's get on the ground and see if I can get up. But gradually get those joints moving. You know, hang on to the side of the bed and do a squat. You do some hip mobilization exercises. Again, there's a lot on YouTube, but get things moving. In our practice, we really focus on getting people moving and helping, you know, people individually. It's not just a generic prescription. We have to see where people are and help them move from there and give them things that they enjoy doing. If someone is, you know, it's not a gym rat, never went to the gym, or maybe a little introverted and doesn't like going to the gym, that's perfectly fine, and that person's not going to exercise. We have to find what they like. Some people like to dance. You know, if you ever seen a dancer that wasn't very muscled, very toned, very flexible, yet very, very strong. So, I mean, that's a wonderful form of exercise, again, with done in a fashion so that people are moving all their joints and moving, you know, all in all directions. I'm a huge fan of people being outside, especially now. There was just a study released. People that had low vitamin D levels did the worst cardiovascularly over time. And it's not just low total, but low free vitamin D levels. But again, I'm a true believer that it's not the vitamin D that causes the deterioration. It's the lifestyle that causes the deterioration. So if you're inside and sedentary, your vitamin D levels are going to be low. So get outside, get some vitamin D. Replacing them is never going to fix the problem, just like replacing protein. You can't replace it with eating a steak every day or increasing your protein. You've got to move. You've got to expose yourself to vitamin D to be able to improve those things. And you can change your body composition at any age, but it does require some work. So you have to do the things you like. So if it's dance or walking and adding some mobility in a class, a yoga class, but don't fool yourself that, you know, little bits of doing this or that is going to, you know, then you can sit the rest of the day. It's going to take some work. I think that sometimes steppers and elliptical machines can be really dangerous at the gym because they're one size that fits all. And so if your joints don't hinge completely or in the same degrees that the machines are hinging, you can actually get a lot of injuries from those. So you can do a lot with body weight that and accomplish in a lot shorter time. Lunges by yourself, but lunges by a chair so that you can hold on to something that you can, you know, feel assured that you're going to be okay. Moving on under your own body weight. So if you're, you know, if you're doing band exercise, make sure you're standing so that you have to balance yourself while you're doing them. I think, you know, sometimes we get our movement just like our eating. You can survive on really bad food for a long time, and you can survive by not doing anything for a really long time. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you have no balance. You can't walk, your hips don't move, you can't get up steps. And then you have to start undoing all those things that, you know, happened over the years. So keep moving. Keep all your joints moving. You know, don't force them. Open the door gradually. Open those, get those hinges moving in your shoulders and your hips gradually so that you can get full range of motion. Because over time, it's just going to get, you know, more tight and lead to more injury. Enjoy the process of starting to move again so that you don't cause so much discomfort and pain that you want to stop. It should be pleasurable and should be fun. So play. I think the best part about all of this, you know, whether it's cooking or exercise, is that we have to learn to enjoy each part of it. It has to be play. I love our plant-based Strider group. I did a little intro. You may have thought that was goofy. There was some wind and some noise, but it's really fun meeting people down to go for a walk and a good discussion and, you know, do a little running. it makes the, you know, sets the tone for a very positive morning. I love going for a walk and a run with my dog. That, you know, that's also a very peaceful thing. You know, just the two of us breathing and running along, hearing the birds in the morning. I'm going to play one of those videos of, because I hear the birds so loud in the morning. So not a video, but I guess an audio. So that people can hear this, the beautiful sounds that occur when the sun's coming up. So give it a try. Set your alarm a little early. Get up, see the sunrise, hear the birds. And move in ways that you haven't moved in a long time, but not too much, just gradually. So there's been several studies in the last year looking at stent placement in people that have what we call stable angina or no angina at all, and the outcomes. And when we say stable angina, we mean people may get a little chest pain when they exert themselves, and then when they rest, it goes away. It doesn't occur from sleep. It's not prolonged. It's not a chest pressure with sweating, diaphoresis down your arms that makes you sick and vomit, and you go to the hospital and you need an emergency stent. We're not talking about that. We're talking about either exertional chest pain or perhaps some fatigue, and you do a stress test and they say it's abnormal. What do you do from there? And a lot of cardiac casts are done each year. It's a great moneymaker for hospital and private cath labs. People do a stress test. Often the stress test is not a really good stress test, that people haven't been taken to their maximal functional capacity. So we don't know a lot about that. It's stopped prematurely. The pictures are not that great. So people are referred for heart catheterization. And then they find a blockage, and it's like, oh, you got blockage, you know, 80%, 70%, 90%. Or, you know, now we're seeing CT angios that, you've got a terrible blockage and something needs to be done right now. So you get a CT scan that's worth 200 x-rays to get referred to a heart catheterization that's referred, you know, that's the equivalent radiation of another 200 x-rays, and then you get a stent. And so what good did that actually do you? And the ischemia trial has shown that people do not have less deaths or less heart attacks in this setting if they're medically managed appropriately. Now, does that mean taking all your medicine, changing your diet, changing your lifestyle? Yes. If people are unstable to the point where they are having, and I'm not unstable, but if people are having symptoms, we certainly don't want the heart to be stressed. So maybe some people need medications up front. But with changing to a plant-based diet, we can get people off medications very, very quickly and start them into a process that they're reversing disease. There are 50,000 stents each year that are deemed inappropriate. And that's about $30,000 per case. And it was estimated in the study $1.5 billion savings. But there was an editorial that looked, and it's like, well, there's really more like 150,000 cases, which would be $6 billion annually. So you can see how that can really amount up to a lot of money. But it also adds up to a lot of morbidity. But despite these studies being done over and over, unnecessary caths and angioplasties are performed, and people are told that you need to get something done. You need to get something done to take care of this. And the thought of reversing, changing diet never enters into most physicians' minds. The thought of being able to help people change their diet doesn't enter into most physicians' minds. Most insurances don't pay for a registered dietitian to see people. If they do, they recommend an American Heart Association diet that does not reverse disease. So it's, you know, it's really easy to go along the line and say, well, let's make this problem go away. Let's just go ahead and do the catheterization and do the stent placement, and then it'll be gone. You know, that blockage is gone and we don't have to worry about it. But what people don't talk about is the risk associated with doing the procedure, 1% risk of stroke, heart attack, or death, plus the risk of the subsequent medications that people have to take to keep the stents open. So the antiplatelet therapy, the things like Plavix or Brilinta, can cause stomach irritation and GI bleeding. So often people are prescribed a proton pump inhibitor, and those can decrease the nitric oxide production by the endothelial cell and actually increase the risk for more vascular change and possibly thrombosis, not to mention the GI upset and possible risk of bleeding, not to mention that the stent can clog up. There's a certain percentage every year and that clog up. Some are associated with a heart attack, some are associated with just chest pain. So people may have not had a symptom, had an abnormal stress test, got a stent, and now they're actually having chest pain because the stent is not seated right or it started to block up and then requires another stent, another procedure, another $30,000. And then if, you know, again, people that are going down this path need some sort of other surgery, say a knee replacement or a hip replacement, now they're on blood thinner, the risk of that procedure goes up with the bleeding complications. Stopping that increases the risk of a stent, thrombosis, or clotting. So it just becomes a snowball effect when what we could do is change people's diet and lifestyle. In fact, there was another study just recently published in the Journal of American College of Cardiologists that looked at restenosis of stent placement. And between 2009 and 2017, 8 years worth of data, there were 5,100,394 procedures with an average age of the person being 65. That's 5 million plus procedures. And they're looking at restenosis. And they looked at restenosis associated with a heart attack or a restenosis associated with an angina or primary stent placement. And so they basically, to take you kind of through this process, 5,322,890 people. And then again, they came down with the 5,100,000. 4 million of them were primary stent placements, 4 million plus, and then stenosis was 542,000, 112%. So 10.6% of people that got a stent placed had restenosis or a heart attack within that follow-up period. Some of them had what we call bare metal stent, 16%. Some of them had a drug-eluting stent, which is a much more common stent that requires long-term antiplatelet therapy, 55%, and 29% they didn't know. 18.2% of the people had a mild heart attack versus 22% of people that just had a new stent put in. People that had the ST elevation myocardial infarction, 8% versus 15% with a new stent. So an ST elevation myocardial infarction is the big one. That's the one you actually need a stent for to save your life, to save heart function. So just getting a stent puts you at risk for having a heart attack that requires an emergency stent. If you look at the hospital mortality and morbidity, it was same whether you had a restenosis or a primary stent placed in. So again, the risk is still there. If you looked at the authors of the study, they literally had a page of affiliations with stent companies and drug companies. And, you know, so I mean, this is all big business that's being driven with not a lot of good data or not a lot of things presented to the actual patient to let them know exactly what the risks are. I mean, we rarely tell people that get disc surgery done on their back or lumbar surgery or cervical spine surgery that there's, just by having this surgery makes you very much likely to need another surgery because we're decreasing mobility and changing the whole anatomy of your spine that may cause another disc to go and for you to need another surgery. So this is, you know, general medical care, treating pathology, it's a big risk. Again, part of what we do causes problems down the road. And again, it'd be much better to back up things and start treating before we get to the pathological condition. But certainly, it would be a lot better to weigh the risks versus benefits of some of these procedures and maybe choose the long-term approach, which would be a gradual change of diet and exercise, or mobility training and release that will allow the disc to heal and not require a neurosurgical procedure or again, reverse cardiovascular disease. reverse diabetes. So again, it's our society that we want to get a quick fix versus actually put in the time and effort to gradually change things and turn the clock back, so to speak. I had a practice manager in here yesterday, and we were talking about dietary changes, and he's like, oh, you made me feel bad, you know, with all the bad things that I eat and that I'm out of shape. And, you know, he worked for a large practice, and, you know, they're working very hard to get new patients and do procedures. And, you know, but then he's like, oh, that'd be pretty tough to make those dietary changes. And he said, what about the Mediterranean diet? You know, what about that? He asked me where I got my protein in the Mediterranean diet. And it's like, well, when we're trying to turn the clock back, it takes more effort than if we're, you know, gradually delaying the buildup of a problem. The American Dietetic Association is full of diets for diabetics that, you know, just restrict things a little bit. Try to alter the way you do things just a little bit. Eat desserts that, you know, are low fat, but it doesn't do anything to turn back the clock. It's just delaying the progression of complications, perhaps. I had another segment that I recorded while I was running, and the wind was just too bad to put it on. I didn't figure you'd tolerate any more of the wind noise than you did in the beginning of the podcast. But I was thinking as I was running, what did I eat back when I was a resident or a fellow in training? You know, what did I cook for dinner? It's, you know, what did you, you know, and I often ask my patients that too, and they kind of look at me funny, and I think, well, I can't believe you can't remember. But when I looked and I started thinking, what did I cook for dinner every night? And, you know, certain things came to mind that we ate frequently, and it was barbecue chicken and frozen vegetables and a potato. You know, that's like the most, and stir fries. And the stir fry would have had most likely chicken in it. And of course, the other thing we would have had was pizza once a week. And, you know, we might have went out for a stromboli once a week, and, you know, probably had a fish dinner once a week that, you know, had a vegetable, again, and a potato. So you look at a protein, you know, a meat and a vegetable and a starch for the most part is what you're looking at. So wonder if we just met everybody right there, what could you possibly do? Because frozen vegetables aren't bad, you know, they're quickly fresh, you know, blanched and frozen, minimal salt added. I prefer fresh, but again, if that's where you are, let's keep the bag of mixed frozen vegetables. If it's peas and carrots, let's try to, you know, up your game a little bit, throw some broccoli, peppers, carrots, you know, cauliflower into that mix. So, you know, up your game with your selection of frozen vegetables. Up the game with the frozen vegetables that you're going to buy, the ones that are just vegetables, not with the sauces, because that's going to add a tremendous amount of salt. And of course, we're going to up your game and not have the ones that are breaded into high fructose corn syrup along with salt, along with oil. So you got your frozen vegetables, and you got a potato. So you got a baked potato, boiled potatoes, white potato, sweet potato, purple potatoes. You can alter those. So that those two things, you can change that meal up. And then you add some beans, you know, whether it's pinto beans, white beans, butter beans. They can be canned, no salt if you can add, you can find them. Certainly Trader Joe's and Sprouts carry. And a lot of Whole Foods carry no added salt or very low sodium beans. So you can get those. Worst case scenario, you get the beans and you rinse them. When you get organic beans, you get a can that does not have BPA. So other regular canned vegetables have a BPA-lined can, which is a carcinogen. So, you know, try to avoid that. So at least go to organic beans. So you have one meal. So you have frozen vegetables, potato, and beans. Keep it separate. I do the frozen vegetables right in the skillet, season them with some garlic and black pepper. Some people add a little flavored balsamics to it, especially if it's a broccoli. But don't go overboard with the seasonings. Learn to like them. We have a couple potato-based cheese sauces you could do. Again, then you would limit that would be your potato for the meal. So you could do that, you know, if you were going to do a potato cheese sauce over vegetables and then the beans, you would be done. So I guess that's two meals now. Try to look at, you know, most people when I was doing that stir fry, you know, way back when, it would be soy sauce. and it would be high salt soy sauce. So you can go low salt soy sauce. Better yet, you can go cocoa aminos, which is going to be about 60 milligrams versus 600 milligrams of sodium per tablespoon. You could add a little bit of miso, like a teaspoon. Miso is fermented soybean paste. That's going to add some flavor without a tremendous amount of salt. Then look to go from your, you know, powdered spices to adding some fresh spices. Fresh garlic is going to change, you know, give you a lot more antioxidants, and it's going to give you a lot more flavor than the powdered garlic. Ginger, fresh ginger grating, that's going to give you a distinctive ginger flavor. Sometimes it's really hard to get it out of the powder. To limit the sodium, again, from using a pepper sauce or a chili pepper sauce, use real chilies. Real, you know, you can substitute a jalapeno or a long red to give you some spice. And, you know, and then go from there. Look at some paprikas and start to blend different things. We didn't talk about it, but, you know, a Mexican night is always something that we've done. Again, rice and beans. Make sure you add the greens in there. If people don't like greens raw, you know, a big green salad with, you know, kale or spinach or arugula, then saute that vegetable, put that under the beans and rice. Even making your own salsa can limit the sodium again. Tomatoes, peppers, onions, cumin, lime juice, you know, real easy to spin that down and make salsa that's going to last for several days. It's going to save you some salt. So now we're down to, we've got three or four meals, really easy, and then one night do a soup. So either a chili or a vegetable soup. So you got five, six nights, really easy, with things that aren't much different from what you've done before. If you liked meatloaf, sub in a lentil loaf. You can always make two. One of those are frozen. So there's a lot of different things that you can do without a lot of effort, but you need some planning and effort. And, you know, some of these things came to me in the morning while I was running, because I think about what I'm going to have for dinner when I'm in the morning. If you wait till 5 o'clock to think about what you're going to have to dinner, it ends up being takeout or something that you probably shouldn't eat, or you're going to grab something along the way while you're getting ready to cook. So think about, you know, the week and plan it a little bit. Again, here at the office, we help people do some planning. We give some people, you know, we give people ideas. It's a great time to plug our cookbook. Go on over to Amazon and get Plant-Based Wellness Cookbook, The Doctor, The Dietitian, and The Diva. We have everyday meals that you can get on the table pretty easy that taste good and look like things that are familiar to you without, you know, really changing things up. I have a new member that, you know, was at an assisted living facility and had been eating very bland, doesn't like spicy things. So you start with that person. Yes, she likes mashed potatoes. So make mashed potatoes with almond milk, a little nutritional yeast, a little garlic, perhaps add in some mushrooms, a potato soup, adding in some sauteed, you know, spinach, peas, leeks, carrots. So you can make a nutritious soup starting where somebody is and then just changing it up a little bit. The Fiesta bean soup that we have in our cookbook, we hide a lot of things in there. We hide mushrooms, we hide greens. Everybody that we've tried it on really likes it. It's good for the whole family. It's hearty. So it's a great way to feed your family, but not, you know, not take a whole lot of time. And then save the weekends for something that you might experiment a new recipe. I like to go to Instagram and look at different people's recipe and then, you know, try to recreate it. If you see a recipe that has oil in, just don't put the oil in. I never put vegetables in the Instant Pot. I think it makes them too mushy unless you're going to make some sort of soup. The only, I do my vegetables on the skillet with a little bit of water. But, you know, do experiment with, you know, fresh herbs and spices. It'll kick things up a notch. So I hope you take some of these suggestions and, you know, change your diet a little bit, change your activity a little bit so that you're thriving more than just surviving. Because we know, you know, we can all tolerate a bad diet for a long time before things start to go awry. We can all tolerate, you know, not running, not doing, being mobile for a long time and still things really start to get bad. And then we have to try to turn the clock back. So I hope you enjoy it. If you'd like to learn more about this practice, I actually did an interview with Chef AJ on her YouTube channel this week, and it talks all about my practice and how we go about things. So that's a good, quick 1-hour synopsis on, you know, how things work here in Port Charlotte. Please go over to drdulaney.com and check out the website, DOCTORDULANEY, and check out the different level memberships that we have. Level 1, level 2 is all online. Level 3 is full member. We have nutrition classes here in the office that we also Zoom. Full-time registered dietitian, movement, wellness challenges. So we really try to walk the walk and get people really moving and into thriving and not just surviving. Email me at Jamie at Dr. Delaney with any questions that you might have. You can follow me and see what I eat on Instagram at Jamila Delaney. And go over to Plant-Based Striders and run with us and tell us about your running and show us some pictures from wherever you are. It's so fun to see people from all over the different scenes and the different weathers running. So we'll enjoy hearing from you. Until next time, get your vitamin D, get your sun. Get out and get your vegetables and enjoy some new fruits. Eat seasonally, move your body, be kind to others, and I'll talk to you next week.